This is the July 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Today, a special edition of our program. We will not talk about the price of commodities directly today, but rather we'll explore the European Union's deforestation regulation as it was written up in an article by Joanna Colucci and her colleagues here on the University of Illinois campus earlier in the week. And then we'll return to a conversation that I had related to this issue in 2016. At the CUTC, that stands for Corn Utilization Technology Conference, with a representative from Cargill and one from PepsiCo. I think you will find it all very, very interesting. It would seem pretty likely by now that soybean farmers across the United States will have heard or maybe even been asked to deliver their crop for a small premium in trade for providing the location of the farm and proof it has not been deforested since the beginning of the decade. This has to do with a European Union regulation, which is supposed to move the trading bloc into compliance with the Paris Agreement on climate change. The EU, starting in December, explains Joanna Colucci from the University of Illinois, will require this proof on 7 agricultural products.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me in your radio show again. The 7 ag products targeted by the European Union are soybeans, beef, coffee, palm oil, cocoa, jute, and rubber. Like you said, companies and traders planning on selling these products to the European Union market will have to be able to prove that their supply chains have not contributed to deforestation anytime after December 31st, 2020.
You wrote about this deforestation regulation that's being put in place by the European Union, Joanna, for the FarmDoc Daily website earlier in the week. People can find that article at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In it, you outlined those 7, and I'll repeat them again, commodities. They include soybeans, cattle, coffee, cocoa, palm oil, rubber, and wood, could not be imported into the European Union, and that there was some due diligence for that which would be imported into the European Union as it relates to the supply chains for these products. What does that mean?
That means that the European importers must conduct this due diligence before importing the affected products. The process for European importers must involve first, collection of production information, including geolocation. Second, risk assessment based on the information collected. Risk mitigation if a significant risk is identified, for example. Due diligence declaration submitted to European authorities at the product's entry, and also annual reports on their due diligence efforts. It's important to say that this process will be required even if a product meets all sustainability requirements and applicable local standards, for example, because proving compliance through this due diligence is mandatory. No compliance will result in penalties such as fees and restrictions for European importers and global exporters.
I suppose I should clarify that it is possible to import these products into the European Union. It's just that it starts with the idea that there has to be traceability with them and geolocations which prove that the land these commodities were raised on was not deforested after December the 31st of 2020 for the commodities. Of all the products that are listed, which of them is most likely to impact, for instance, Brazil mostly, which is what you focused on in this article?
So Brazil is a leading exporter of most of the commodities in the scope of this new legislation. The European Union is Brazil's second largest trader partner behind only China. So, answer your question, cattle may be the sector for which the regulations pose the most significant challenge, requiring a longer transition period and investments. Brazil is one of the largest beef producers in the world, with nearly 25% of it being exported.
So just to repeat some of that, 25% of the beef that is produced in Brazil is exported, and about 30% of the beef that is imported into the European Union comes from Brazil. However, the new deforestation regulations are likely to partially interrupt the import of Brazilian beef into the European Union. On another note, here in the United States, we know that Brazil is the number one exporter of soybeans. Is that trade likely to be interrupted?
Actually, more than 60% of Brazil's soybeans are currently grown in Cerrado, the Brazilian savanna. It's not a forest. It's important to note that the European regulation does not cover the Brazilian savanna. It covers only deforestation of forests. Even so, Brazil has one of the strictest environment laws in the world, called Forest Code. The legal reserve, for example, is a law requiring landowners to keep 20 to 80% of their property under native vegetation, depending on the biome. For example, farmers can buy land in the Amazon biome, but they can only farm to 20% of it because the legal reserve there is 80%. Brazil, in that, has recently opened many soybean areas, most of them in the Cerrado, the Brazilian savanna, where the legal reserve is 20% of the land. And these are areas that were deforested legally, I mean, following environmental rules such as the legal reserve.
Are there practical effects that these regulations, for instance, might incentivize for Brazil as it relates to deforestation codes or pushing traceability within the agricultural production systems, maybe even worldwide?
Yes, I think so. Despite challenges for some supply chains with additional costs, the European legislation could present an opportunity for Brazil to move forward in implementing the forest codes, reinforcing policies combating deforestation, meet its goal of zero illegal deforestation by 2030, and develop national monitor and traceability systems for commodity chains. With that, Brazil could ensure an even larger share of its products in the European market and new markets as well.
Finally, does the United States stand to benefit in any way?
Actually, the new regulation could benefit countries that deforested their native vegetation in the past, prior to 2021, like the United States. The big difference between Brazilian and American agriculture is that in Brazil, the expansion of agriculture happened in the last 30, 40 years. The conversion of prairies here in the American Midwest happened at the time when there was little talk, little discussion of environment conservation. But it's important to say that food cannot be produced without converting areas. Countries who continue to expand agriculture production areas, even those with regulation to preserve native areas like Brazil, may face more difficulties with the rules imposed by the European Union. Therefore, countries like the United States can be benefits, even without having specific environment legislation regarding agriculture like in Brazil.
Joanna Colucci is a member of the FarmDoc team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and the lead author of an article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu this week. It's entitled "How the EU Deforestation Rule Will Affect Agriculture in Brazil." Stay with us. We'll talk more about sustainability, this deforestation regulation, and how it impacts agriculture in the United States in just a moment. Now, if you'd like an easy way to find that article, you can do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org. This agricultural programming does come from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, where you can sign up and subscribe to the programs, including the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, along with the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. They're under the podcast tab, or you can look for the USDA reports there. Reports from CONAB and the size of the Brazilian crops as well, all under the USDA reports tabs. And you can also just check out the daily content that comes from the Farm Doc team, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Given our conversation earlier in the program with the Farm Doc team's Joanna Calusia about the EUDR, the European Union Deforestation Regulation, I thought it might be interesting today to return to the 2016 Corn Utilization Technology Conference, sponsored by the National Corn Growers Association and held in St. Louis, or CUTC. NCGA invited PepsiCo and Cargill to speak then about their sustainability and traceability efforts at the time. I had what I still consider to be an enlightening conversation with Marty Minsmeyer of Cargill and Rob Meyer from PepsiCo. Again, this conversation took place in 2016. The corn growers had recognized a need to reach out to consumers, most of whom had long ago lost any real connection to the farm. The two companies, for their part, Cargill and PepsiCo, saw it as an opportunity to discuss sustainability from their perspectives. We'll start with PepsiCo and Rob Meyer. I asked him how it defined sustainability.
Oh, boy. So sustainability for us, we go back to the classical definition. It covers the three core aspects of sustainability: economic sustainability, social and environmental, and you really can't look at one without the other. And so we start with a broad view of sustainability at its base.
When did this become important to PepsiCo?
It's really always been important to PepsiCo as a food and beverage company. We've been doing sustainability long before sustainability was a term. We've been in business in the U.S. since the 1960s and even before then. Really since then, we've relied on sustainable agriculture to deliver high quality agricultural raw materials for our products.
And how do you see your role, PepsiCo's role, in the supply chain from the farm gate to the consumer's plate?
I think that our role, I think it's really important for us to serve the role of telling the story of the growers in our supply chain. A lot of growers in the U.S. are doing great things. And growers that are in our program, our sustainable farming program, do a lot of great things, but they also recognize there's always room for improvement. And so I think the role that we can play is to tell that story of the good things that they've done, and then also tell the story of the ways in which they're improving and working with us.
That's Rob Meyer of PepsiCo, recorded in 2016 at the Corn Utilization Technology Conference. Now, he mentioned three sustainability goals for the company: economic, social, and environmental. Today, those are listed on PepsiCo's website as helping to build a circular and inclusive value chain. I'll define that further as providing some benefit, likely economic, sometimes social, from the farmer to the consumer. Inspiring people through PepsiCo's brands to make choices that create more smiles for them and the planet. This is clearly social and pushes the positive economic value from that first goal while helping people feel good about how their choices are benefiting what PepsiCo's chairman said earlier this year is, quote, evolving the company's food and beverages so they are better for people and the planet, unquote. Which leaves what Marty Minsmeyer referred to as environmental and set forth in PepsiCo's website today as, quote, positive agriculture, defined as working to source crops and ingredients in ways that restore the earth and strengthen the farming communities. PepsiCo, by the way, launched its first sustainable farming program in 2013, The company today says it has a goal to spread regenerative farming practices across 7 million acres by 2030, improving the livelihoods of 250,000 people in its ag supply chain, and in the process, sustainably source 100% of its, quote, key, unquote, ingredients. That's 7 million acres. It's a worldwide goal. By comparison, there are about 320 million principal crop acres in the United States. There's another 120 million acres of pasture in the U.S. Still, let's stay with our 2016 conversation parameters. Rob Meyer from PepsiCo defines sustainability as economic, environmental, and social. As you'll hear from Marty Minsmeyer from Cargill, a provider of many ingredients to PepsiCo and a grain elevator system that works with farmers directly, his company had similar sustainability goals.
I really don't think it differs that much from PepsiCo's. I mean, we would take that sort of classic definition of doing things today to allow future generations to meet their own needs. We've viewed it as more a corporate responsibility. We've used that term as much as we've used sustainability. Recently, we've looked at what we do and where we do it as a global corporation, and we've decided that we're going to start with four priority areas. They're going to be land use and deforestation. It's going to be water quality and water quantity. It's going to be climate change, and it's going to be farmer livelihoods. We've looked at where we do business, and we look at the issue areas that we think we have the greatest ability to impact and make change. And so we've selected those four areas for Cargill. Those areas may change. We hope to make progress on all of them. We're frankly even working through the specifics of what those areas do mean to us and how we're going to put programs together.
Today, those four priorities are three for Cargill. Land and water have been combined into just one, which Cargill defines as protecting, regenerating, and conserving the planet's resources. Climate, in an effort to reduce emissions and sequester carbon. And finally, people. Noting agriculture is powered by people, from farmers, ranchers, and producers to factory and food service workers. Marty Minsmeyer from Cargill then turned directly to corn.
Drilling down a little more to U.S. corn production, which is the division that I'm working on, it's trying to make sure that the corn is grown that comes into our plant is done in a way that shows continuous improvement around several environmental metrics and shows compliance with certain baseline grower practices to meet the needs of our customers and our other stakeholders that we have.
Your customer would be PepsiCo?
Our customer is PepsiCo, a very good, loyal customer to us. We're glad to have Rob here today to give both the supplier perspective as well as the consumer brand perspective. We really kind of went all the way across the supply chain here today, getting the growers, the processor, an organization that helps us measure continuous improvement, and then getting the retail brand perspective in all of this as well. You have to bring all of those players in and hear everyone's perspective to really put a program together that works for everybody.
Tell me about that organization that is in the midst of this that's being developed.
One organization we are aligned with is called Field to Market. It was started in 2006. Sort of anticipating this challenge that we currently have, especially in the processing community, of seeing retailers with sustainable procurement goals and farmers that we need to have show continuous improvement at some degree in a way that's fair to them, and in a way that can actually end up adding value to that grower as well. So they have several tools, including an online field print calculator, where they can go in and add information around several environmental metrics for their production of corn, soybeans, and five or six other commodities, and see how they do relative to others in their region, others in their state, others in their country, to show continuous improvement over time.
Collection of big data.
A lot of it is about collection of big data. You're absolutely right. Big data is very, very hot in agriculture right now, and it will continue to be so.
Two things of note and a reminder here. First, Field to Market remains a player in this space today. Secondly, big data is just called data now. And finally, this conversation was recorded in 2016.
How can we harness some of that data on a consolidated anonymous basis to be able to show continuous improvement, for instance, in a draw area around a plant of ours, maybe in Paris, Illinois? How can we show that the growers in that area are improving over time?
Is PepsiCo interested in this kind of information, and are you involved as well in field to market?
Yes, we are. We were in the room with Cargill back in the day. I think I went to a few meetings in 2007, 2008. It took us a while to join. We joined in 2014. We last year started a field print program with our potato growers. We're going to expand that program this year and move into corn as well. So we see field print as an effective way to start to measure outcomes. I think one of the strategic elements of field to market that's going to be really important, and I see that as really a next step, is how does this organization create these pre-competitive collaborative spaces for all actors across the supply chain to work on continuous improvement programs within a defined boundary to address specific risks with roles clearly defined up and down the supply chain towards making improvements.
Wait, so I want to take that sentence apart just a little bit. The pre-competitive thing, that tells me you don't really want something that is Cargill owned only and or ADM owned only that you would have to deal with as it relates to big data and collection. Is that what I'm hearing to begin with about the ability to find the whatever data it is you're mining, that you want to be able to grab it from all places in one place?
Well, actually, you know, I agree with a lot of that. But when I talk about this need to work collaboratively, pre-competitively, it actually goes back to a little bit of recent history. You know, up until about 5 or 6 years ago, consumer goods companies like PepsiCo, we really focused internally on sustainability, and there wasn't a big expectation that we needed to look beyond our own boundaries. That's completely changed, and it changed pretty rapidly. Now there's an expectation from, you know, our customers, our socially and environmentally conscious investors, our consumers, and other key stakeholders, NGOs, that we do have a responsibility across our supply chain. That happened really quickly. And what consumer goods companies did in response to that was we developed all of our own programs. So Pepsi has a program, Coca-Cola has a program, Unilever has a program. And then we proceeded to try to push that program down the supply chain onto folks like Marty. I think that we all realize that when you look at these programs and you look at what we're trying to achieve, it really can be done in a pre-competitive way. And that's the most effective and efficient way, you know, to do this. And so what I see the role I see field to market playing is to providing that pre-competitive safe space to work on sustainability in the same way that we worked on issues like food safety in the past.
Much easier then. I take it you'll agree with this, that it's done through field to market. Then I was thinking that Cargill would create that process and imprinted upon PepsiCo, but it was coming the other way. So probably a whole lot easier for Cargill and ADM and Bunge and the rest of the crew to move through this system.
There's alignment needed on both sides, both on the consumer goods side as well as on the corn processing side in my case. And so we, in the same way that Rob's industry is trying to find ways to align and come with common approaches, we're doing the same thing within the Corn Refining Group. We have the Corn Refiners Association, our main trade association, formed a sustainability committee about 3 years ago. We realized there was an opportunity to approach some of these questions collectively as an industry. I think we see both competitive opportunities and collaborative opportunities. In some ways, we're all in this together. We're about seeing continuous improvement in corn production metrics, efficiencies in our own operations, and on down the supply chain. And we may be able to compete in some ways too. If we find that we can outperform the others on some of this, that may give us a competitive advantage as well. So for our industry, there's really kind of a mixture of both. We're in the processing community are now seeing the importance of addressing this, I think, a little bit later than some of our retail brands, who have a different set of pressures, a set of consumer pressures to approach these things. And I am really enlightened and encouraged, I should say, by a lot of the efforts of our customers to come together and to find some consistent approaches, because we've made a lot of progress there, I think.
Again, this is a conversation from 2016. That was Marty Mensmeyer of Cargill. As it relates today to the Corn Refiners Association, on their sustainability goals, they mention field to market. CRA's commitment, it says, to sustainability also includes active efforts with field to market to advance continuous environmental improvements in U.S. agriculture, engagement with responsible supply chain platforms, and partnerships with organizations working toward reducing environmental footprints. On the pre-competitive side that was mentioned by PepsiCo's Rob Meyer, it was interesting to see that the FieldPrint platform went down on July 1st for an update, which it says will include new features and functionalities in the version to enhance the ability of farmers and the agricultural value chain to analyze sustainability. It introduces a tool to measure the risk of nitrogen loss to the environment using the Environmental Defense Fund's Nitrogen Balance or N-Balance model. That inclusion of an NGO's model or a non-governmental organization is interesting all on its own. From this point in this 2016 conversation, I turned back to PepsiCo's Rob Meyer and I asked him what it was that consumers, actually myself, might gain from all of these collaborative efforts.
I think that what you can expect from us is this message of collaboration is really important. I think we're not trying to tell a grower or someone like Marty how to do their business and how to run their farm. We really want to understand and take a snapshot of the practices that are in place. If we feel that there are ways to improve, and there's always ways to improve, we want you to go enter into that journey with us. We're committed for growers with whom we have direct relationships to do that in partnership with them, enter into that continuous improvement journey with them, and provide solutions and services to them to improve their profitability and strengthen our supply chain. So I think that's what you can expect. Another thing that I think you can expect is, and this is something that we all need to do a better job of, is to tell the story of the grower, because I think that's where sustainability happens. It happens on the farm. And it's really the job up and down the supply chain, up to the point of the grower, to figure out a way to really tell that story effectively.
So pretty easy to do. You said field to print with potatoes. I can think of Five Guys burger joints where they up front tell you where those potatoes came from for their French fries. Obviously, not very many potato growers, either in the United States or across the planet, at least, that are supplying to larger companies. However, corn growers are a whole different story. How do you try to back that all the way around and put it in place where you're telling? Can you tell an individual story for corn when this is a co-mingled commodity, meaning it is simply a commodity? It's priced as a commodity. It's widely available across the planet, produced in large enough quantities by enough people that they don't set a price for it. A price is set for that commodity.
Much of the food corn that we buy and process directly in our plants isn't really a commodity. There's nothing necessarily special about it. It does have special quality characteristics that need to be passed in order for it to be, to process well in our plants. And so that creates, a different type of a relationship with food corn. With shared commodities, when we buy corn-based products like sweeteners and vegetable oil, it very much is fairly complex supply chain with not a lot of traceability. That's the space where collaboration, has to happen. Where we have direct relationships with growers, we'll have more of a unique relationship with them. Still willing to collaborate, but where you are sharing that commodity in that complex supply chain, collaboration, I think, is key.
As an end user consumer consuming the products you produce, is this a niche market? How big is this market for PepsiCo, and how far across your product lineup might it stretch?
Well, for us, it's not niche, but the problem we experience is in agriculture, it is, you know, I mean, we're, you know, way right at the decimal point when you talk about the food corn that we buy. I mean, we buy corn from a few hundred growers in Illinois and Nebraska that we process, you know, so you can imagine it's pretty small. Potatoes, it's the same issue, you know, I mean, we are the main buyer of chipping potatoes or chipped stock potatoes, but that in most marketplaces is a very small percentage of the overall potato market. So we find ourselves in that niche space quite a bit where we have those direct relationships. And actually, that's why we have the direct relationships is because we are niche.
So not so easy to sell a farmer who's producing corn, maybe food grade corn, but commodity corn for the kinds of plants you might have that produce high fructose corn syrup, not so much.
Correct. Not quite so much. We have a challenge as well in the non-food corn, you know, kind of the general feed area, number two yellow, in trying to get some of the other sectors other than just the corn syrup refiners to also engage in this process.
I can see the economics for you. For PepsiCo, where this makes business sense monetarily, economically. Is it about economics, transparency, or avoiding regulation?
I would say yes, yes, and yes.
Again, we're listening to a 2016 conversation at the Corn Utilization Technology Conference. That's Marty Minsmeyer of Cargill. That last point on avoiding regulations did not happen, as in 2019, the European Union formulated its deforestation regulations that you heard about earlier in this program from Joanna Colucci, the FarmDoc team member. You can find that FarmDoc Daily website and the article she wrote on July 2nd there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu about the EU deforestation rule. It will take place at the end of this year.
On the regulatory question, I think it's fair to say many of us are trying to find a pre-regulatory solution here. I've worked in Cargill's Washington office for 4 years in my past, and I know both the positive aspects and some of the challenging aspects that government regulation can bring. I think we're trying to find a pre-regulatory private sector solution to focusing on corn production sustainability that can't satisfy the needs of several stakeholders.
It is important to remember here that corn is not covered by the European Union's deforestation regulations. It covers soybeans, cattle, coffee, cocoa, palm oil, rubber, and wood.
And transparency is another very large issue. People want to know where their food comes from. That also means people want to know where their ingredients in their food products come from. And so we're faced with more and more requests to go back to the farm level with the ingredients that we supply to our retail brand customers, QR codes on consumer packaging, featuring a particular farmer in our supply chain and telling their story. You will see more and more of that.
Do we need to have traceability within the system as well?
Given the way we operate with a large-scale corn plant, pure traceability is very, very difficult, if just not outright impossible. We have several thousand independent business owners supplying us with high-quality number two yellow every day. It's difficult to create a system where you can fully trace back all of the corn that comes into our plants. It's a very complex supply chain. Some of our plants and our competitor plants take corn directly in from growers. The same plant can also take in from a commercial elevator. Given corn quality and existing corn prices, that corn may stay in storage for a year, 2 or 3 years. So having a full traceability system is really difficult. I think you need to strategically pick those supply chains that make the most sense if you want to put a pure traceability system in place. It is available in some sectors. For large-scale corn wet milling, it's very difficult.
Difficult for commodity crops, but not impossible. For instance, to achieve traceability for deforestation-free supply chains, ADM in 2021 decided that it would begin to try to track back direct deliveries from the farm to the farm where those soybeans originated. They used satellite monitoring in that particular case. ADM, a competitor of Cargill's, in a March 2022 report, relates that it had enabled measurement of its deforestation and conservation-free sourcing volumes for direct suppliers to 97%. Earlier this year in the United States, ADM offered farmers a 20-cent premium if they would geolocate their farms for them and deliver harvested soybeans from those farms directly to an ADM facility. That's an economic pull for the farmer. I asked Marty Minsmeyer of Cargill about those kinds of pulls back in 2016.
I think economic gain is always important to growers. High yield and production is always going to be important to growers. Our challenge is finding the right way that the concept of sustainability fits into that. Growers have so many times told me personally, their field is their operation. The quality of soil is extremely important to them. So they often ask me the question, you think I haven't been operating sustainably all these years? I need to. And absolutely they have. But what I think we need is to now take the step beyond and to show through actual practices and actual data. But in many cases, we already know that we've seen sustainable production in place. Just saying so isn't enough to our retail customers. It isn't enough to activists, and it isn't enough to consumers who ultimately use the products that we produce.
As Marty mentioned, these are global issues. Both companies, Cargill and PepsiCo, have global footprints. Is this an issue that changes from one continent to the next across the planet?
You know, I've had the opportunity to travel all over the world, literally doing this program for PepsiCo, and I ask farmers everywhere I go, what are their biggest concerns? And I know I'm a sustainable ag guy, so I expect them to talk about water or something like that. Every single grower has told me three things. One is their biggest concerns are better price and more volume. Every single grower. And the third one, which has been really interesting, is all the growers talk openly about the changing climate. A lot of them aren't ready to debate human caused climate change or anything like that. But they'll all tell you that it's changing the way that the seasonal patterns and the weather, that's governed the way that in their calendars each year is changing, and that's true all over the world. So all of those things are commonalities, and so the approach really that we take with a large commercial grower in the U.S. And a smallhold farmer in India is similar in terms of the conversation we have with the growers about profitability and livelihoods. We don't start talking about sustainability or soil health or water conservation. It's really a discussion around, sustainability is really about the profitability and the livelihood and long-term viability of your farm.
Rob Myers is with PepsiCo. Marty Munsmeyer is with Cargill. I spoke with the two of them in 2016 at CUTC. That stands for the Corn Utilization Technology Conference, sponsored by the National Corn Growers Association and held in St. Louis. We were discussing at this time sustainability and traceability of commodity products like corn. As it happens, 3 years later, in 2019, the European Union imposed the deforestation regulation, which will be put into place and made active at the end of this year, and will have an impact on commodities, not corn, but soybeans out of the United States and six others, of course. You can hear this program again if you'd like on our website right now today at willag.org, willag.org. Look for Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.